Welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. I'm your host, Jeffrey Wright. For one last time, we'll be on the air from 2 until 4. Starting next week, we'll be on the air from 12 until 3. So come check us out. You can also stream us live on YouTube, on Twitch, on X, the Everything app. George Ruggiero is the producer of the program. You can follow him on the Everything app at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good afternoon, Jeffrey. Not a relaxing afternoon, I suppose. Pretty busy one.
Certainly a newsy afternoon. So because of today's lead story about the Memphis Grizzlies and their announcing that they essentially are open for business in the Ja Morant market, DeMichael's going to join us in about an hour or so, but he's got things he has to do. So he has other responsibilities for the commercial appeal, so he is tending to those. He's going to join us at the top of the next hour. We'll get his thoughts. George and I, of course, will talk about it as well. Blake Topmeyer writes about college football for the USA Today Sports Network. We will talk about last night's another thrilling playoff game. The Rebels come up short as Miami will move on 31-27. We'll talk about that. George and I will also talk about that probably a little bit more, though, towards the list. But we'll talk about it with Blake Topmeyer, as well as tonight's Indiana and Oregon game live from Atlanta. Looks like ESPN's getting their pregame started up right now as we speak. We'll get into the list. We'll pick our games of the weekend. We'll tell your story, and then we will get out of here. But over at ESPN.com, George Shamsarania writes the following. The Memphis Grizzlies are entertaining offers to potentially move two-time All-Star Ja Morant ahead of the February 5th NBA trade deadline, sources told ESPN. According to Shrania, multiple teams are pursuing Morant in trade talks, and rival executives believe the Grizzlies would prioritize draft picks and young players in return, sources said. This is the first time the Grizzlies have engaged other teams in trades for Morant, who was the number 2 pick in the 2019 draft. Morant, 26, is under contract with the Grizzlies through the 27-28 season. He is eligible to sign up to a 3-year, $178 million extension this summer. He's averaging 19 points, 7.6 assists in 28.3 minutes per game this season, while also shooting a career low 40.1% and 20.8% from three. Of course, Morant has also only played in 18 games this season because of injuries and a 1-game suspension stemming from a post-game exchange with Coach Tuomas Isolo in November. Here's that stat, George.
Oh, yeah, it's back.
I had mentioned on the show yesterday with Cobb.
I still have no idea why they put that on the ticker, but
I'm now at the point where, like, I'm somewhat, like, convinced that, hey, you want to add this?
Oh,
that
could this have been
a nudge.
A little, hey, how you doing?
Because here it is again. Memphis is 10-9 without him in the lineup and 6-12 when he plays. He played just 59 games over the 23-24 and 24-25 seasons because of two suspensions for incidents with guns along with various injuries. Also, should be noted, a season-ending labrum surgery on his shoulder.
Right.
Was it labrum or rotator cuff?
It was labrum, yeah. For sure. God, those handful of games that you're
Games. I mean, right when he came back was the New Orleans game, and you're like, oh, yeah.
This is what this looks like.
This is way better.
Yeah.
So, I think the first obvious question is, all right, so what does this mean? And putting it in layman's terms, this story does not get out like this if you have not decided you're done with Ja Morant. You are trading him. I don't think it's close enough to where you would say they got a deal in place, because I do think that they publicly stated their intention to, all right, boys, get your bids in. Which brings us to the next question. All right, what are we looking at? What are the possible returns? What are the Grizzlies going to get? What are they going to get back? What are the types of deals that we would be seeing perhaps for Ja Morant. So ESPN and their various insiders ask a couple of questions. Number one, how difficult will it be for Memphis to trade Morant? This is a big season for Ja, General Manager Zach Kleiman said at a Grizzlies media day in September. As we continue to build this team, to be able to achieve a high-end outcome, we need Ja to be consistent, an all-NBA caliber player. Instead, an inconsistent Morant has suffered through his worst season as a pro. His scoring has dropped to 19 points per game, the lowest since his rookie season back in 29-20. He's shooting a career-low 40% from the field and 21% from three. Among 134 players with as many shot attempts as Morant this season, the guard ranks 133rd in effective field goal percentage. But because point guard is such a deep position around the league, few other teams need a player like Morant. One of those potential suitors, the Washington Wizards, just added a new point guard, obviously in Trae Young. It's difficult to imagine a serious bidding war for Morant at this stage or for much of a return for Memphis, given that the Wizards' acquisition of Trae Young came with no draft compensation headed to the Hawks. That's according to Zach Cram of ESPN. So I do think it's when you're comparing, obviously, to Trae Young, I'm curious to know, does Ja's contract help or hurt?
My initial thought, and this also could just be the way my brain works from this sort of talk in so many of the other sports that I end up having covered, be that as a writer or watching, typically an extra year or two of team control ends up helping just because there isn't that level of uncertainty with, okay, like you go in knowing what number you've got, right?
Is his contract a set number or is it tied to the cap? Because I thought his was tied to the cap.
But I'll check that, but I want to say because he signed it when he did, I think it's a set number.
Because Bobby Marks notes this. One thing working in Memphis's favor in trade talks, unlike Atlanta with Young, Morant missed out on All-NBA in 22-23. If Morant had made it, the five-year $197 million rookie extension he signed in the offseason would have increased to $237 million. In the apron era, the details matter. Instead of an onerous $47.3 million cap hit this season and a $50.6 million and $53.9 million over the next 2 years, Morant is owed $39 million, $42.4 million, and $44.9 million, respectively. So
it is not tax-related. It is not a set percentage of the cap.
It's just an escalating.
It is just a backloaded extension contract. So a team acquiring that deal then would go in knowing, okay, this is kind of what we have to account for the next two seasons, and then we can go from there.
Yeah, and I do think you make a good point. Contracts are going up.
Right.
And even though I'm not saying it is a nothing burger, this is nowhere near a Supermax and whatnot. Like,
no.
I'm not as convinced that it's as...
It's not this untradeable number
correct.
Either. It's based on what we have been seeing a lot of these contracts, especially for all-star caliber players, players that can reach that ceiling, that potential. You know, I know that that's been a lot of the conversation is... Look at the guys that have gotten traded recently. They've kind of lived up to that. They've reached that level. We haven't seen it in how many years now with Ja. But, you know, from missing games, for whatever reasons those may be. Right?
All right. So here's where I'm gonna need your expertise. All right. The insiders list four deals, and giving a peek behind the curtain, these do not seem like George and I just whipped up the trade machine and go, what if?
Right.
These feel like offers.
Is this the ESPN?
Correct.
Okay.
All right, you ready?
Fire away.
All right. The first one is with the Miami Heat. The Heat would get Ja Morant. The Grizzlies would get Tyler Hero and Simone
Fontecchio.
Fontecchio, yes.
Seen him play a couple
Fontecchio.
Times. Fontecchio. Yeah, seen him play a couple times. Good shooter.
Is he Italian or does he just look Italian?
No, he is Italian.
He's actually from Italy.
Yeah, he's from the motherland.
Okay. I cannot say that I'm as that intimately familiar with Mr. Fontecchio's work.
I've seen him play a year or two ago with the Pacers at a game or two, and then I saw him with the Heat earlier this year. Not a great defender, but he's a shooter.
It appears also his minutes are getting cut.
That would not surprise me. The Heat have a lot of players that kind of fit that mold, if not ones that are a little bit better. Like Jaime's gotten a bit more minutes this year, a little bit more run. He's a little bit more versatile. Wouldn't shock me. I don't know if you're looking at just him or the Heat. Pelly Larson, they're also very high on.
If this is the type of deal they make, this to me tells me that this is just a salary dump, because I believe Hero.
Is he expiring?
Yes.
I also wonder what number he's at.
Sorry. Next season.
Okay, so he's got one more year on his deal.
Correct.
So the Tyler Hero of it all is that you're not really, to me, that is truly a salary dump deal, in that Fontecchio is probably on a short-term contract. He came over from Indiana. I want to say it was on like probably just a short little free agent deal. Tyler Hero has a lot of the same on-court issues that you see sometimes with Ja, especially when it comes to his...
playing defense.
Playing defense would be putting it very kindly from what we see out of Tyler Hero. I mean, wasn't the entire game plan for the Cavs last year just, hey, if that guy's on the court, go straight at him.
But where's my B offense?
Quite literally, where is he? But Tyler Hero's offense at this point seems to have been a little bit more consistent. And it seems like he's on the court more often than not.
I'm giving this if we're doing the gladiator thumbs up, thumbs down, and I won't get super nerdy and let you know that it's actually reverse in actual Roman days, I'm giving it a thumbs down.
I am also giving that one a thumbs down. Not a fan.
Okay. The second offer, the Milwaukee Bucks.
Okay.
You can see where this makes sense. Giannis is back doing the media blitz of, I want to stay
here. I need more people around me.
But I want better players. And I also think it would make sense to send Ja to the East, because what I can see in the East is everybody's looking around going, this is wide open.
Oh, yeah.
There's no Thunder.
Nope.
There's no Wimby coming. Like, it's up for grabs.
Completely up for grabs in the East.
And again, it did not feel like it in real time, because it felt like the Thunder were destined to win.
Halley of it all.
The Pacers took him to game 7 and had a lead before their best player got hurt. So, there is a chip in a chair. Well, now, get to the finals. You know what I mean?
And you see what that team looks like right now without him.
Correct. And they've obviously
lost other injuries.
But
yes.
Certainly the most glaring one is what they look like without him. All right, so the Bucks, which I think would be an interesting trade partner. Kyle Kuzma.
Okay.
Kevin Porter Jr.
But also
don't Google him.
That part of it. Yeah. I'm well aware of that part of it. I'm thinking more. I saw him a couple weeks ago,
and a 26
pick swap,
first round pick swap. So I don't.
What's Kuzma's contract look like?
Kyle's definitely an expiring.
He might be. Spotrac is taking a little minute. No.
All right,
he has
so
it's the same thing as Hero. He's got one more year on his deal.
What?
22.
All right.
That's more than manageable.
which we basically decided that's kind of the new mid-level exception.
Pretty much.
I mean, I think the MLE is like 18, right?
Right.
So
that's manageable. You can work with that. You can
basically next year that could be the MLE.
I mean,
All right.
Cap's going up, so it might be.
This would also have to be a three-teamer with the Pistons taking Gary Harris, and then cash considerations.
I don't think they're super worried about moving on from Gary Harris by any means. Porter, I don't know if they really want to move on from.
So
I mean, didn't they just acquire him?
Yeah, but
he's also only 25. Like, they need a guard.
I can see where Giannis wants Ja. I can see that universe.
Me too. Takes a little bit of pressure off him, especially on the offensive end. Like, it isn't just the Giannis and everyone else show. It's more of an actual pairing.
And we've talked about how we've really wanted to see Ja have an elite pick-and-pop partner.
Right.
Or two-man game partner. That would be...
They also have Miles Turner now. Miles Turner has been has shown that's a lot of his game is playing beyond the arc offensively.
We'll get to the job at all in just a moment.
Okay.
All right. I'm pretty indifferent, but if we're doing the binary, I would begrudgingly give thumbs up.
I thought this could at least be a three because, you know, we'll usually start out in the middle. Because I was leaning towards the middle, ticking upwards a little bit. I could see where that one works out a little bit more for both teams. Porter Jr. only has 1 year left technically expiring, but he's got a player option. Whether he exercises said player option, it's not for a huge number.
Now, the problem with this deal is you then immediately become a Bucks hater, and not because they got Ja. You become a Bucks hater because if it's going to be a 26-pick swap,
you need them to fail
spectacularly to the point where in the summer they're like, blow it up.
Well, if it's a 26-pick swap, is that not this year's draft?
God dog it. Yes.
All right. I mean, we're talking about you would realistically have access to, because we are getting, no matter what, they're getting the pick from either Phoenix or Orlando, right? So you're gonna
this would be the third first. No, because it's a swap.
It's a swap, so it would really only be anything.
I've changed my mind.
You're changing
your
mind now.
I'm going down. Thumbs down.
Okay, because my whole thing with this, the only actual asset that I would care about in that is Kevin Porter Jr. Because, like, I think he has a ton of potential still. He can be a primary, like, a lead ball handler. He's only 25. He's not making a ton of money. Kuzma is kind of whatever to me at this point, and you're not getting a pick. But the kicker with it, this is where the contract comes back into it. There is no term for Kevin Porter Jr. So I'm giving it a thumbs down. This could very well turn into, within 6 months, oh, you gave up Ja for
literally nothing.
Literally nothing. Not even...
No, that's what, when I don't know why I was reading it as... next swap, like the next year.
Right.
All right. Yeah. I think
I'm going thumbs down.
Once we work through that one, thumbs down. I hope everybody's noticing a trend. All right.
Are we getting Corey Kispert in this? I mean, sorry, wrong team. My bad.
Listen, there was a couple of summers ago where I talked myself into Kispert.
Was this when he was coming out?
Yeah. Especially like when I was like, 3-point shooting. All right.
Could be a little frisky on that Wizards team.
A deal with the Raptors.
Okay.
The Raptors would get Ja Morant. The Grizzlies would get Emmanuel Quickley.
Okay.
And Oshai Agbaji.
Okay.
And a 26 first rounder. I need to say it this year out loud. This year, first rounder, top 14 protected.
Okay.
Quickley, I think, is the big get in that, because Agbaji, I think, is...
Agbaji is on his second club option, and then he is an RFA this summer.
All right.
And I don't think, like, for what it's worth, he also has not shown me a ton. Like, I don't think that's a guy that you're necessarily stumping to keep.
No, that feels like he's just thrown in there to make the numbers work.
Which... Even that is kind of tough. What is Quick? So did Quickley sign an extension with the Raptors, or is this still his Knicks deal?
So according to Cram,
this is
Quickley's
his
contract
second...
is somewhat underwater as it extends for another 3 years at 32.5 per season.
Yes, I'm seeing that now.
So it's not escalating, but
no, it is completely flat. It is what it is. If the cap goes up, it doesn't matter for Quickley's deal. But it does take him through 28-29 into free agency.
Spirit of full disclosure, I've never had the Emmanuel Quickley gene.
I don't know if I don't have the gene. I think early on in his career, I saw a ton of him with the Knicks, and I really like just the spark that he brings. But he's a very similar player in that he's dealt with injuries. He's an undersized guard. He is a good shooter. Like, I'll give him that. He can put the ball in the cup. But
so
at least with this one, the way that I can, like...
He has... I'll give him this. He's played 37 games this year.
Okay. That's more than last year. By now, a large margin.
Now, to your point, here we go. Year one, 64 games.
Yep.
Okay. Year two, 78 games.
Pretty good.
Year three, 81.
Even better. I love that. Hey, year, how about year four?
30.
Okay.
Then...
Is he in year five or is this
I'm
year
sorry.
Six?
No, because he split it. He split with New York and Toronto. 68 total.
Okay.
All right.
It's not terrible.
33 last year.
I was going to say, I know last year was very bad for him. And then this year, I mean, it's only half, not even half over, and he's played most of the games. So there were injury concerns last season, but could that have just been a one-year type of, like, major injury? I don't know what he was dealing with last year.
Why did I keep saying knee?
Elbow.
Elbow, okay.
Elbow cost him the most last year, 21 games, from November of 24 to December of 24.
All right, the Raptors would attempt to upgrade at the point guard position, where Quickley has been fine but unspectacular since joining the team in the OG Anunoby trade in December of 23.
Right.
The season, Quickley has a 15.5 player efficiency rating, 15 is league average.
Right.
Which seems a fair assessment of his current value, this according to Cram. So we are talking pure replacement level point guard.
At this point, yes, and he is the same age as Ja. So we don't know what kind of, is there runway there? Is there growth? Is he at least going to be on the floor more often than not?
I am going into this with the expectation of knowing I was not going to be wowed by a deal.
Oh, same here.
This is even more underwhelming of an enterprise than I was even anticipating.
Okay.
I don't think I can give that a thumbs up.
This one to me is a lot more...
Especially considering it's top 14 projected. Now, the Raptors are unlikely to be a lottery team, so whatever.
Right.
But, I mean, we're essentially talking about... Would you trade Ja for essentially a replacement level point guard and
a middle of the first
round pick in this year's draft? Now, you could make the argument.
I think that's better than what
Atlanta got. Well, what the argument would be is in a very good draft, you are either giving yourself more swings or
more capital.
The potential to move up.
Right.
Now, more times than not, though, in the NBA, in good drafts, guys don't...
Teams
very rarely are like, all right, our phones are on.
True. Especially with only two rounds.
Correct.
That sort of deal.
All right, I think I'm thumbs down.
I don't love this one. I don't know what the last one is.
All right.
Also going to give this one a thumbs down for now. Because if the last one's just awful, I might have to switch at least one of these to a thumbs up.
I think here's what we can do. We'll do our binary thumbs up, thumbs down.
And then we'll rank them.
And then we'll have to sit there and go, all right, which one would you...
If this was all that was on
Russian
the table.
In a game of Russian roulette, which one are you picking?
Okay.
All right, you ready?
Yeah, thumbs down on the Raptors, though.
Final offer. Ja Morant to the Timberwolves. This is also a three-teamer.
Okay.
Beg your pardon, four-teamer.
Ooh. Love when we get all these teams on the phone.
Sure, this actually does feel like a climbing special where it's like, can we just make it even a little bit more complicated of a deal?
How much spice, how much drama can we add in this?
Correct. All right. I'm already kind of out on this one because it's mean to my guy, Mike Conley. All right. The Timberwolves get Ja Morant.
Okay.
The Grizzlies get Rob Dillingham, Naz Reid, and a second.
Okay.
The Wizards get Terrence Shannon. The Jazz get Mike Conley in cash.
Don't send him back. Don't send him back to the wilderness.
So, I don't love Dillingham. I like Naz. Naz Reid is the, I liked him a lot more at his old price.
Right.
Because yeah. The new deal is quite expensive.
It's hefty. He's currently making 21.5 for this year. It is also a backloaded contract with a player option at the end of it at 28. But, like, that's one where you could sway me. Like, I don't love Dillingham, but you have, that's a guy where you actually have the runway. He's only 21 years old. It doesn't feel like he's getting a ton of actual, like, run with this team purely because they're actually trying to compete.
I think this is the closest I am to thumbs up.
Me too. Like, Naz Reid.
Is that also, though, are we actually showing our Western Conference bias because we've just seen them play more?
I mean, maybe, but.
Because I have now officially become like I am in baseball. I watch the Grizzlies, and then that's about it.
Right. I try and watch a little bit more, and like by virtue of working a bunch of these road broadcasts, I get the opportunity to see some of these Eastern Conference teams. But even then, like Kevin Porter Jr., like, come on. Like that,
I'm trying to be honest with the audience. Like
that does not move me.
I am not the league pass junkie.
Oh, neither am I.
Like I just
don't have league pass.
Correct. All right.
Or FanDuel SM for that matter. Oh
well, save for the list.
Okay.
You know where. More on that later. All right. I think I'm ranked. So if we're doing ranked choice,
right?
I liked the Heat deal the worst.
Oh, that one's terrible. No, thank you.
Okay, so I'm putting that at 4.
That one also ruins Ja. Because you know who the offensive coordinator in Miami is, right?
Yes, it's Noah.
It is Noah.
LaRoche, right?
Yeah.
I'm also not sure I want Ja going to Miami.
Oh, do you think there could be a...
I do think two things can be true. It's sad that it got to this point.
Very. Incredibly.
But I do think a change of scenery could be very good for him. I think a change of scenery and a change of role. And that's not me going, it's our fault.
Right.
I am literally saying I think he just needs to start over. And I do think he needs to start over where he's not lead dog anymore.
Yeah.
Because I do think he's 26.
He's 26. He is so immensely talented, it's not even funny. Like, how many times, even in a season where he's only played...
The Philly game! 2 weeks ago.
The Philly game. Just the amount of pure brilliance that he can still draw out of himself is incredible. I do think Miami could get stuff out of him. Chris Finch... There in Minnesota, I think it gets him out of him. He's also not being asked to be the lead guard.
Yeah, I think my third choice. So I'm ranking last.
Last
the
is,
Heat deal.
Is Miami, right?
I think I'm then ranking the. I think I'm going to rank the Raptors deal third from last. The quickly Abaji and then.
Right.
Probably Bucks 2 and then Timberwolves 1.
Yeah, Timberwolves, because like with that one, you could pretty easily convince me, say, hey, Naz Reid is going to be really good for your ball club. Like, I just think he's a valuable basketball player still.
No, I'm with you.
And we are dying for centers.
All right, you can turn your headphones off after this. We're going to talk about last night's playoff game with Blake Topmeyer. Ugh. I'm sorry, buddy.
Oh, no. You're good. We were going
back
and forth.
My wife hit the under. I set the over-under at 3.5 plays that she would watch.
Plays?
Oh, yeah. You know, she's like Calkins. Oh, she Calkins? She can't watch.
Gotcha.
Ole Miss went 3 and out, and she went up. She did not know that I had set an over-under on number of plays that she would actually watch. She got up, announced, I thought we were going to win this time, and then went downstairs. And turned
was
on
this after the third down play or the fourth down play? Or the punt, excuse me.
She got up after the third down because what? Chambliss got blitzed and then threw it away, right?
Yeah.
And I think it was grounding. So I don't.
It was intentional grounding, yes.
I don't think she saw the call of intentional grounding. She was already down the stairs.
That's a hard under.
She was.
She did not.
Yeah, no. It was three plays.
That's three plays.
All right. Let's take a break. When we come back, Blake Topmeyer next, right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Blake Topmeyer is the senior national college football columnist for the USA Today Sports Network. His podcast, SEC Football Unfiltered, episodes available each and every week. Follow him on the Everything app, at BTopmeyer. Blake, it feels like we haven't spoken to each other in a month. But I guess let's start with last night. When you think about last night's game, what comes to mind?
Well, I mean, just so close for Ole Miss, you know, a couple things go the other way, and they're in the national championship game. This is unfair, but the thing I kept thinking of is if Carnero had not missed that one field goal.
He hit it too good.
He got too good. We expected him to make every
single
kick.
I told George he hit it too pure. He should have taken something off of it and gotten a softer bounce. He learned his lesson. Then when he kicked from 54, a little bit softer, and he got that bounce.
No doubt. Because, yeah, the one that clanked right off, squarely off the upright, I mean, that one would have been good from 70. He didn't need it to be good from 70. He just needed to go through the uprights. And again, I know that's unfair because
and Miami missed a kick, too.
Yeah. But that really was what I was thinking there is because he's got such range, I thought. Man, if all Ole Miss needed a field goal here, they'd be walking it off with a 68-yarder. But they didn't. And, yeah, I mean, the other thing, Carson Beck, you know, the redemption story now sort of writes itself. I don't really totally understand why he needs a redemption story. That's the part that, like, I don't get. Like, he was a really good quarterback at Georgia, kind of fell out of favor with some fans, I guess, and then transferred and has been what Miami needed. So I don't totally understand the redemption arc, but that's where everybody's going to gravitate to.
I promise I'm not nitpicking at my wife or any Ole Miss fans. You know what thought kept going through my head as I was watching this game? Mario is going to paint his Mona Lisa. Because the entire time I'm watching this game, I'm just watching the lines of scrimmage, and I'm like, how is this a football game? Miami was so dominant. And then, like, in the second half, I'm sitting there going, like, I mean, listen, I'm on record. I still got stock in the White Trash Prince Enterprises. Like, I still got some Beck stock. Like, was I feeling great about it when he was missing all the overthrows? Like, not particularly. But I'm sitting there wondering the second half, like, why did they ever throw?
Right. Right. I thought the same thing. I mean, they were just dominating between the tackles, and there was a time when it was like watching the second half, I'm like, how does Miami not have any points after halftime? Because, like, they're controlling the lines of scrimmage here. How do they have no points? It's like you said, maybe they made a mistake putting the ball in the air at all. But it's one of the things, like, Ole Miss was so close to winning, and yet I don't really have a question that Miami deserved to win. They look like the better team to me, you know, throughout four quarters. And so, yeah, Ole Miss was so close. Better team won that game, I thought.
No, I when I did a post-game show for my old bosses that I worked with last night, and I felt the same way. It's like, I thought if you're an Ole Miss fan, you could be proud.
Yeah.
Like, they went out on their shield. They made Miami have to earn it. And they fought to literally the very last play. I thought the better team won the game.
Totally. And America's team went down. It was interesting. Some down in Atlanta for the Peach Bowl. Watched the game with a friend at a pub last night, and it was all Indiana fans. I'm not convinced there's an Oregon fan in this city. I guess we'll find out in a couple
That's
hours.
That's a lot of travel for them, man.
Yeah, like, it is. It is. I get it. But I seriously have not seen one Oregon fan. Like, I get it's a lot of travel, but I'm like, sure, there's not one down here?
Is there not some people in the part, like the team party?
Yeah. But anyway, so the pub's full of Indiana fans, and they're all rooting feverishly for Ole Miss. And I didn't get the sense that it was because, like, Indiana fans thought, like, oh, we'll have so much of an easier time with Ole Miss in the national championship game than they would with Miami. I think it was just truly Ole Miss had become America's team with Lane leaving and all the fallout that came with that. And then everybody loved the Trinidad Jambla story. You had a pub full of Indiana fans just rooting so passionately as if Indiana was the one playing. It's like, guys, it's just Ole Miss here. You're going to be okay. You guys play tomorrow. But that's what it was. Like I said, I think Ole Miss the past month had become America's team. With Lane making the heel turn, and but hey, the villains I guess won out, and Miami's the U is back.
Was Lane Kiffin the happiest person alive last night?
He's probably maybe not quite as happy as Michael Irvin, but I think he was probably pretty happy. He'll never say that. He'll tweet his heart is broken for Ole Miss.
He'll tweet through it. We know that's for sure.
Yes, he'll tweet through it, but. Was he privately kind of glad to see Ole Miss go down? I think probably. It's one of those weird things because, like, if Ole Miss keeps winning, that's good for Lane's pocketbook because LSU would have had to keep cutting him bonus checks based on what they agreed to, that they were going to pay out the bonuses that he would have got had he stayed Ole Miss's coach. So, yeah, it hurt his bank account, but I think, like, that man doesn't need money, right? Like, he's got enough money. He's good there. So, yeah, I think he probably was quietly rooting for Miami, even though he'll never admit it.
I don't even think the money was helping.
No, you don't even think that was a salve at all.
No, yeah. I think like that. I think it was like the most, it's the type of money, like I wouldn't even call it like blood money, but it's like it was the most unsatisfying type of money you could get.
Yeah, totally.
Which, by the way, yeah, I would love to have that problem.
Right, exactly. It's a very blessed life that he can get $500,000 or whatever the last bonus was, and it's like, this does not help me feel okay about this. But, I think that's probably right. Because Lane had told himself, he was telling himself throughout this entire process, A, that Ole Miss was going to let him coach the playoff. I think Lane was surprised in the end when Ole Miss didn't let him coach the playoff. I don't think he should have been surprised, but I think he was telling himself they were going to let him coach the playoff.
I don't think his representation was surprised.
No. And then I think he also was telling himself if they don't let him coach in the playoff, that the team was going to be lost. They'd be lost without him. They couldn't do it without him. I mean, no, they made the semifinals without him and came pretty close to making the championship game. And we can speculate as to what happened, what would have happened if Lane would have stayed the coach, but we know what did happen after he left, and they looked just fine without him. And I'm sure that got Lane a little bit where it hurts.
So someone asked me this, I'll ask you. Do you have a confident answer? Had Lane coached the Georgia game, do you still believe that the result would have been different?
Do I think they would have lost if Lane coached the Georgia game? I guess I don't feel that with like strong conviction. I think they could have lost if he would have coached the Georgia game.
It's one of those ones where I think it's a fun hypothetical, and like I understand from an Ole Miss fan, like it's part of like, oh, we lose that game without him. Like, okay, like yeah, it's. I just don't know how you can really have a strong conviction one way or the other.
Yeah, I don't feel that passionately. I mean, I know one of the arguments is, oh, Lane would have been going for fourth downs in a couple of those cases where Golding took field goals. They needed those field goals in the end. Well, okay, we don't entirely know that's true. Lane was got a little less aggressive with the fourth down calls the last couple of years. A. B, what if they would have went for fourth down and converted? You know, they might have been getting touchdowns on those drives instead of field goals. So, we could play that game, but who really knows? Yeah, I don't feel passionately one way or the other about whether that result would have been different against Georgia.
This might be an unfair question, but do you feel like the national champion is playing in the game that you're about to cover?
Yes, I do. Doesn't mean I don't give Miami a shot. Their defense is good. They're so good at the line of scrimmage. I give them a shot against either of these teams that are playing tonight, but it does feel a little bit more like this is the title game. In a way, I thought that was the case last year. As thrilling as Penn State Notre Dame was, Notre Dame rallied in the second half of Ohio State, but that game was over by halftime. I felt like last year the national championship was Ohio State to Texas in the semifinal.
Yeah.
And I think it's sort of similar in this one. This does feel like a bit of the national championship game tonight in terms of, you know, the quality of the teams remaining. But I think Miami's done enough to impress me, you know, throughout this playoff. Do I think they're not dynamite, right? I mean, Miami's got a little bit of limitations. They're not going to hang 45 on you. But man, what they're good at, they're really stinking good at. The same reason all of us at the end of September thought.
Hey, Blake, we weren't wrong. We were just early.
Yes, we were. It's so many times, like, we pivot off these opinions, and whatever. That's what you do when you live in the opinion space 365 days a year. You pivot. You start to question.
And we only have 12 data points to make a decision.
Right. And so we all pivoted away from them. But no, our first impression, I think, was it's been proven correct. Miami is a team that can win the national title. They curiously lost two games. One of them, Carson Beck threw four interceptions in, so that one wasn't so curious. But yeah, I mean, all the reasons we thought Miami could win a national title in September are still true. I just think Indiana in particular, I just think is better. It's a more complete team. And so, yeah, this feels a little bit like the national championship game, but like I said, it's not that I give Miami no chance. It's just I think the two best teams remaining are probably playing tonight. Certainly the best team remaining. I think Indiana's the class of the field.
It feels unfair simply because, like, part of my hesitation with Miami is like, well, what's the status of Mezenor? You know,
yeah.
Like, that was the other thing last night that you realized, like, hey, that was a really physical football game. But I just felt like, given all the injuries, I was like, man, whoever comes out of this game feels like they're going to be shorthanded, because they're obviously going to have the safety have to miss the first half because of targeting, which, love that freaking rule. And then I think they already had two other DBs that were banged up. The tight end went off. Like, it was part of it for me was thinking just the amount of guys that got lost, but something tells me Indiana and Oregon tonight are probably going to hit each other pretty hard too.
I think so. Yeah. Up to this point, and military analogies are overused in sports, but I'm going to use one anyway. It's been a war for Miami to get to this point of the playoff. I mean, there's been no layups, right? I mean, they could have lost in College Station in round one if Marcel Reed throws a red zone touchdown pass instead of an interception to end it. So, I mean, they could have been out of there in round one. That was a stinking battle for Miami. And then they got a battle with Ohio State. And then last night, you know, coming down to the wire. So, yeah, I mean, there's been it's taken everything they got in the tank to get to this point. What does that mean for the championship? I don't know. I'd probably rather be in Indiana scenario for all the talk of, oh, the bye backfires. Well, it didn't backfire on Indiana. And so now they've played one fewer game in the playoff. Miami didn't play in conference championship game. But conceivably, Indiana, you could say, is a little fresher. But you're right. After we see tonight, I mean, this thing could be a fist fight tonight, and so we might not be thinking that Indiana's all that much fresher than what Miami is, depending on how tonight goes.
Well, and to your other point, if Miami can run the football, and if Miami can play defense, well, throughout the history of time, that's usually a decent formula to stay in the game.
Totally. I mean, everybody, like, is sort of doing this thing. I'm guilty of it too. Like, who is the new, like, old Alabama? Like, the peak of the Saban dynasty before they started ripping off first round NFL quarterbacks. Who's
2012 Bama? Yeah,
exactly. Who's 2012 Bama? And it's like, maybe Miami. I mean, there's a lot of things there that kind of remind you of throwback Bama. They got a mean run game that they can just shove it down your throat. They're awesome at the line of scrimmage. Bama always had, like, that one wide receiver who was an absolute stud. Miami's got that. You know, they got the wide receiver or two. They're good in the back end, and the quarterback is sort of an elevated game manager. And maybe that feels like I'm doing Carson Beck dirty, but I think that's kind of what he is. Like, he's a good quarterback, but he's not the playmaker that some of these other guys are, but he's a grade A game manager, and that's kind of what Alabama had back in those days. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of teams you can try to force into that comparison, but Miami might be the closest fit, really, to the old school, you know, as you put it, 2012 Alabama. I think Miami's doing a pretty good impersonation of that.
We're talking with Blake Topmeyer of USA Today Sports. All right, then this is kind of the other question of it all. So we will now officially no longer have an SEC participant in the national championship game for, I believe now, what were we, three straight? Is that three straight championship games? Three straight championship games. Is this a crisis? Actually, let me ask it this way. Is there anything they can do about it?
There's nothing they can do about it. No, I don't think there's anything they can do. I mean, if they get the field to 16, they might get one or two more of their teams in it. But the number of teams in the field wasn't the problem this year. And frankly, last year, I mean, they had three teams in the field. So, yeah, I don't really know what they can do about it. They can try to expand the playoff, get another team or two in. I don't know that really helps you get back in the national championship game. The only thing you can do about it is see if you can start growing a couple more billionaires on trees or something, right? I mean, that's the only thing you can do about it is try to outspend everybody else. And I don't think a lot of SEC schools are doing that. They're not living in the poorhouse, but I don't think there's a money advantage in the SEC as compared to a lot of the other top programs right now. I don't know if they can do that. You know, it's not for me to tell other people how to spend their money. And I don't have a head count of, you know, how many millionaires each school has in their alumni base. But short of suddenly outspending everybody, I don't really know that there is much they can do about it. And I also think, you know, you asked, is it a crisis? I mean, so there's probably people that feel like it's a crisis. I don't know if it really is. Like, it would be a crisis if we looked at the conference and said, it stinks now. It doesn't stink. It just, it's not better than the Big Ten anymore. It's one of the top two leagues, but it's not the number one league. And, I mean, the SEC could put a team in the national championship game next year. You know, to me, it would be a crisis if we looked at it like next season, they got no shot of putting someone in the title game. No, I think if you were taking the odds, I'd probably bet on one SEC team being in the championship next year. Maybe I'd be wrong, but they haven't fallen off a cliff. It's just everybody's got money now, and you don't have to play in the SEC anymore. You can cash the check from the West Texas billionaire. You can cash the check down in Miami or in Oregon or Indiana or wherever. You know, being the blue blood with all the tradition and the nice facilities, it doesn't matter as much anymore. And regional recruiting doesn't matter quite as much as it used to. That was the other big advantage for the SEC, is their schools are located in fertile recruiting terrain. That's still a little bit of a leg up, but I don't think it's quite as much as it used to be. Recruiting's national, and if somebody wants to play halfway across the country, a big fat check makes it easier to do that.
Does the league have a coaching problem?
I think that's another factor. I do not think the best coaches in the country collectively are in the SEC anymore. I think top to bottom.
I guess where I struggle with it though is, do you really? I know you will do it in the summer, but like, do you feel confident of saying these are the 10 best? Not just head coaches. I'm talking staffs. Do you feel confident that you can, like, I'm not saying that somebody would disagree with you, but that you could come up with, you think these are the 10 best?
In the SEC or nationally?
Nationally.
Yeah. It's probably tougher than it used to be because it's like, what are we talking about when we're ranking coaches now? You know, and I mean, I don't know the answer to that, but I'm saying that's open-ended, right?
Like, yes.
Are we talking about X's and O's? Are we talking about player development? Are we talking about who can buy the best roster? I mean, you know, that's what complicates matters. I mean, there's always been multiple layers to this, but like when you add in NIL and transfer free agency, it's like, what are we talking about now when we rank coaches? And yeah, I'll do it because that's the summer exercise we all do, and I'll try to keep all of that in mind. But it's like, you know, having a billionaire fund your roster can make you look like a pretty darn good coach, and maybe you are. I'm not saying like Joey McGuire at Texas Tech. I don't know. I'm not saying he's a bad coach, but like, you have a huge advantage when you have a billionaire who says, "I'll buy everybody you want." So yeah, it is more difficult than it used to be, I think, to assess, you know, one staff versus another. But I do think, on the whole, best we can do to evaluate this, I don't think this is a peak moment for the SEC's lineup of coaches. I think top to bottom, there have been better days in the SEC for its coaching lineup than exists right now.
Yeah, because I was thinking about, is Kirby the best coach?
I think so. I just think the things that made us say definitively a few years ago he was the best coach, I don't want to say they matter less because player development still matters. But
acquisition matters, but you cannot – there's not going to be a team that can just build the best roster. Even Ohio State, which I think most scouts would say that's the best roster. It still wasn't so overwhelming that they're able to walk through.
Right.
So
yeah, and it gets tough. Like, is Kirby the best? I'd say, let's think of it this way: if we were doing a draft, and you're running, looking for a coach of, you know, generic college football program, and you needed to, you had the first pick in the draft, would I take Kirby? Maybe. Would I take Sigs? Huh. Well, that'd be pretty tempting right now, because I don't care who my coach is going to be 15 years from now. I mean, Cignetti is 64. Do I think he's going to be coaching 15 years from now? Probably not. Do I care about that? Not one iota. I'm looking for a five-year window here. That's about what these guys get. Man.
I think you're right. I think if you give me the number one pick, I think I'm taking Cignetti.
Yeah. I think so. I mean, it's Kirby's been fantastic. You know, nobody would dispute that. He went back to back. He took Georgia to the next level, all those things. But Georgia was closer to the level that Kirby took them to than obviously Indiana was than to the level Cignetti's taken them to. Now, the game's changed, and so elevating Indiana is easier now than it would have been a decade ago. But still, like, it's a remarkable feat. I think the guy's a good game day coach. His guys get up for him. So, yeah, it would be
they
really,
never
really
look
tempting.
Unprepared.
They don't. No. And he's winning. He's got a good team. But, you know, we talk about talent. Like, they play like they're the best team in the country, but I don't know that they have what, you know, NFL scouts maybe would necessarily consider the most talented roster. I mean, their quarterback, Fernando Mendoza, obviously he's getting a lot of love from the NFL scouts, looking to be an early round one pick. And they got some dudes, no doubt. But do they have the best roster? In a lot of ways, I would say no. They're playing like they have the best roster, but I don't know they do. And that's a credit to him that they look so stinking good with, I think, what many would say is not the nation's best roster.
No, but I do think the lesson, and who knows whether it'll hold next year. I think the lesson that this year taught me was, I think we've been trying to figure out what's the formula for success, right? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it seems to be, I think most consensus people go, you got to build through high school, primarily backfill with portal. Okay, but let's weigh that out. The two schools that predominantly do that the best are Georgia and Ohio State. Like, I'm almost wondering if it's kind of college basketball-y. It's like, get old.